Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Thursday. We're live at Bar Lines at the Omni Nashville Hotel. We'll talk to Mike Keith at the end of this hour because it's hard to believe. 26 years ago today, it's fielded by Lorenzo Neal. He hands it off to Wycheck. Wycheck throws it across to Dyson. He's got something, and the Titans pull a miracle. The whole setup for that is what's – and it's cool in the press box. They actually have the transcript of it on the wall. But it's just, you know, do the what is it? The Titans' miracle season needs one more or something like that. Can they have it now? Or
I mean, I haven't watched the TV copy.
I've watched the whole game. The whole game is kind of like –
in years.
Yeah.
I mean, so to see all this again, everybody going crazy.
But, I mean, look at the, how they're looking at it.
They had no idea. Nobody had an idea of all that went on. I mean, what is considered the greatest play in NFL history?
Well, I mean, there's a DraftKings commercial with Kevin Hart and LeBron James where LeBron James references this.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
I mean, but what would you – I mean, it's – I forget the NFL Network did one, and I don't remember what number one, but –
I think it was number one for a long time. I mean, you got the miracle at the Meadowlands. You got what was the one, the Saints and the Vikings a few years ago?
I don't remember.
With Diggs. I think Diggs was a part of that.
Oh, that one. Yeah. We jumped up and caught it and ran down the field and threw his helmet.
Just like absolutely broke the spirit of the Saints.
Yes.
I mean, there's been a ton. Don Aaron just told us that he was there, that his whole row had left, but he stayed till the end.
Now I'm very confused on what is considered the greatest play in NFL history. Is it Franco Harris, the Immaculate Reception?
I mean, that's one. I mean, I definitely think the Music City Miracle is up there.
It's got to be, I mean, a top three or four, but remember the list they had, it wasn't up there. Yeah. Greatest play in NFL history, according to AI, is widely considered the Immaculate Reception.
Yeah.
Franco Harris's bunt. Number two, this says Marshawn Lynch's Beastquake run.
That's a pretty good one. I don't know if I'd have that ahead of the miracle.
Odell Beckham's one had a catch, no. Music City Miracle's up there. Devin Hester Super Bowl kickoff. Returning the opening kickoff, a unique feat. I don't see that, but I'm missing. Let us know, our great listeners, what's the greatest NFL play of all time. All these lists have Franco Harris, the Immaculate Reception.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's
number
a good
one.
Dr. Crane has both the TV call and then a story by Jeff Fisher on the Music City Miracle, so go ahead and play both.
Dyson and Bird are deep. Taken by Neal. He gives it to Wycheck. Wycheck, that looked like a forward pass. Taken by Dyson. Dyson down the sideline. Dyson's going to go all the way. And there is no flag. There, no flags on the play. It's a touchdown, but we need to look at that replay.
All that's missing is the band.
That's right. That's the only thing missing.
But I'm going to tell you something. The reason that Wade Phillips was so under control is that he thinks when they look at this, that this is a forward pass. This is not a lateral.
Stands, it was a lateral.
Touchdown. Wow. So that was... Who, Mike Patrick, Theismann, and...
Paul McGuire.
Yeah. I remember... I will never forget that. Because, like, I even, at first, was kind of like, oh, no. Was that a forward pass? But it turns out that it was not.
So, the top five, according to NFL Films, Malcolm Butler's interception was number five.
So, that, yeah.
Number four is the Music City Miracle. Number three, Eli Manning in the Super Bowl, avoiding the Mike Vrabel and the Patriots.
Is that the bubblegum catch?
That was, yes, the David Tyree catch. Yep. Number one, Dwight Clark. The catch, because it basically ended the Cowboys' reign and started the 49ers on their reign.
Yep.
And number one is the Franco catch, according to NFL Films.
Okay.
I feel like there's one more in there somewhere.
I mean, I think the – man, I don't know. Brad may have one. Brad, what you got?
Yeah, no, you guys stole my thunder. That's exactly right. I was going to say the catch with, you know, Dwight Clark, and then the immaculate reception with a 1-2, and Music City Miracle came in at number four. But if you guys have a second, I've got my Music City Miracle story. I was at the game. I was 19 years old. Was with my dad, and we had been to the Tennessee-Arkansas game the year before. And when Christie kicked the field goal, I threw my coat down. I was ready to walk out. My dad looked at me and said, "Hey, remember Arkansas, buddy, anything can happen." And we sat there, we watched it. And two things I'll say that you couldn't see on TV, you had to be there, was number one, when he threw the ball, there was an audible gasp that you can hear on the TV feed, because everyone in the stadium knew as soon as he caught the ball, it was a touchdown. So the cheering started really early. There was nobody there to block him. So, you know, the TV angle couldn't catch that. You knew he was gone. The other thing, when he hit about the 20-yard line, everyone was jumping up and down in unison so hard, I thought the damn stadium was going to collapse. It was
unbelievable. Hey, Brad, where were your seats? Where were your seats?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I actually have the ticket stubs. I just went to the Bellmead Framers, and I've got a print from Doug Hess, who he's the one artist that, you know, the Titans commemorated that with. I tracked the guy down. He lives in Alabama, and I got one of the last prints, and I'm putting my tickets on there. I was sitting in, it was definitely upper deck. Couldn't afford too much more than that. But it was on the Titan side, upper deck. I don't have the exact seat, but
okay.
Yeah,
was he coming towards you, or were you on the same side? Where were you?
I was on the Dyson side, so
okay.
It was looking right down at it. And I would say that they threw the ball about 10 yards behind where I was, and then he ran away. So it's amazing.
Thanks for the call, Brad. Appreciate it. So I pulled up the NFL 100, the 100 greatest plays of all time. So as you mentioned, immaculate reception at one, the catch, Joe Montana to Dwight Clark, and there's a quote here. Ed Too Tall Jones says, quote, "I will always believe Joe was throwing the ball away."
I was throwing the ball to Dwight Clark because we had practiced that at the time. But so that's number two, right? I mean,
yep.
That's a hell of a play.
David Tyree, 3. Music City Miracle, 4. Malcolm Butler interception, 5. Brian Flores says, a lot of times your entire season comes down to 1 yard, one play, and that was it. All right, here's more of them. 6, the Santonio Holmes catch in the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's a great play.
7, the immaculate interception in the Super Bowl, which was James Harrison. Remember
he
ran it like 90-something yards?
And then collapsed, yep.
8, Bart Starr's QB sneak in the Ice Bowl.
It's an iconic moment, right? I mean, that's a massive play.
9 is the Minneapolis Miracle.
Was that the one with Stephon Diggs?
Yeah.
Okay.
10, the Philly Special.
Oh, back to
the
Foles.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good one.
11, 1 yard short, the game-saving tackle.
I'm telling you, man, that play, Miracle, doesn't happen. None of this.
Yep.
Wow.
12, Lynn Swann, 53-yard circus catch in the Super Bowl 10.
It's my all-time favorite play in NFL. At the moment, Steelers, Orange Bowl, great.
13, the Beastquake run, Marshawn Lynch. That was today, January 8th, 2011. 14, Marcus Allen's 74-yard run in the Super Bowl.
Wait, they played a Super Bowl that – oh, no, I'm sorry. That was the Marshawn Lynch.
That's a playoff
I'm
game.
Sorry, I'm stupid.
15, December 28th, 1975, Roger Staubach's Hail Mary TD pass to Drew Pearson.
That's the first ever mention of a Hail Mary.
Yeah, that's what he says. I closed my eyes and I said Hail Mary.
Love it, man.
So that's where it got the name?
Yep, that's the first one ever. The first one considered the Hail Mary. I love this.
16. Now, this is December 21st, 1974. I don't think that's the right date. Odell Beckham's one-handed catch.
No. Great catch. It's not a top 50 play to me, but.
Yeah. Sea of hands catch. Anybody can catch the easy one. You've got to make the hard catch. Ken Stabler.
What game is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
It was Raiders. Ken Stabler.
Is that the Dave Casper catch?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I think that was it.
All right.
18, Vinatieri kick ties the tuck rule game.
Oh, yes.
Number 19, game-winning TD drive in the greatest game ever played. That was 1958. I think it was like
the Colts, the Giants?
Colts and Giants, yep. Yeah. Number 20, and Dell Jr. was quoted here because he's a big fan. January 30th, 1983, John Riggins' 43-yard touchdown run on fourth down in the Super Bowl.
Great play. 44.
21, Montana touchdown pass to Taylor in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's the John Candy play.
Oh, is that?
Yeah, like John Candy's in the end zone.
22, Julian Edelman keeps it off the turf in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yep. That's the Falcons Super Bowl.
23, Miracle in the Meadowlands 1.
Is that the Joe Piskarczyk?
Yeah, isn't that Herm Edwards?
It is. Scooped it up.
24, the catch 2, Steve Young to Terrell Owens.
Yeah, versus the Packers in the playoffs, man. That's what they considered that when Terrell Owens became T.O.
Yeah.
After that.
25, Bo Jackson, 91-yard touchdown run into the tunnel.
Is that versus the Seahawks?
Maybe.
Yeah, we have a good friend who was on that play and got ran over on that play.
We do?
Yes. Greg Gaines, former Tennessee linebacker with the DuPont, Mike Organ's best friend. Bo runs over him and Bosworth in that game.
Nice. I think Eric's calling to correct us on something.
Oh, my gosh.
What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys, y'all were talking about some plays. The game that you were talking about, the Raiders, it was against the Miami Dolphins in 1974. That was a playoff game. Also, if you remember the San Francisco 49ers game, there's another little bit of tidbit fact that people forgot about. On the next drive, Danny White threw a pass to Drew Pearson, and if it wasn't for an arm like a shirt tail tackle on Drew Pearson, he was off to the races because it was wide open field, and people forget about that. Also, I'm sure you talked about the immaculate reception as well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. But, we brought that up.
Yeah, and also earlier you were talking about where was you at for the Titans playoff game. I actually was downtown at the Wild Horse Saloon when that happened. And just remember the whole day, and that's when George Plassen was doing the postgame show and Frank Wycheck came in and stuff like that. I was there from about 10 o'clock that morning to like about 6 p.m. that evening. It was just a wild day, and I loved every minute of it.
Out at 6 o'clock at night, you damn rebel.
Guys, y'all take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate
Thank
you,
Big E. 9797 says, Music City Mirage, it was a forward pass. Sure wasn't. Refs never get anything wrong. Skyler says, DeSean Jackson's punt return while the Eagles against the Giants was crazy to watch. I don't know if it was the best play, but worth noting. That's a big one.
Was that the one they told the punter not to punt to him?
Yeah, and he punted to him.
Punted to him anyway, and he ran it.
Yep.
It was a game winner, right? Overtime?
Oh, yeah. Richie from White House, what about the touchdown catch from Santonio Holmes in the Super Bowl to beat the Cardinals? 8771, Dan Marino's fake spike.
That was good. Versus the Jets. That's right. Love me some Marino.
Kevin from Hendersonville, you'll like this one. The Leon Lett, Don Beebe play in the Super Bowl has to be considered.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
That's the one where he blocked the field goal, and then he went down and he hit it. No. He's talking about the Super Bowl when Leon Lett was running down the field to score and BB knocked it out the one-yard line.
Yeah.
Leon Lett, though, was when he grabbed the field goal and said, don't touch it on Thanksgiving Day versus the Dolphins. That was another big moment. But the BB play was the one where Pete Weber's talked about that, too, where how just iconic moment for Bob, even though they lost it, what BB did. Don BB ended up getting a Super Bowl ring with the Packers in 96.
Yeah, that's a good one. 615-737-1025. We'll have more coming. Chasing Big Joe, 1025 the game. Chasing Big Joe, 1025 the game here on this Thursday. Live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. A lot of you have been calling in and texting about greatest plays and the Music City Miracle and all of that. As promised, do we have the Jeff Fisher? Was this with us?
Yes, it was.
Okay, this was him kind of telling the story.
Einsman on the throw, you know, because, I mean, you guys know the story. I mean, Kevin Dyson was number three in the depth chart on the play.
Derek and then
Anthony Dorsett.
Anthony Dorsett.
Derek was out. He had a concussion.
Yeah, Derek doesn't remember any of that.
No, he doesn't. Like he had a concussion. Because when they kicked the field goal, Alan and I were like, okay, here we go. Home run throwback. Yeah, baby, let's go. And I'm yelling, all right, where's Mace? And trainer goes, Coach, he's somewhere next week. He's got a concussion. I go,
he's back in East Lansing.
Yeah, I go, well, all right, wait, who's AD? And Alan goes, AD. I go, AD, get over here. And Brad, our trainer, goes, he's cramping, Coach. I go, freaking cramping. It's 50 degrees out. What are you? So now it's like I'm just Dyson's walking by. Kevin, hey, come here. And it's like, yeah, Coach. Da-da-da. He's kind of, yeah, what's up? Well, home run throwback. Practice it every Saturday. I need you to be the deep guy right now. Well, Coach, I really never paid attention. So now it's like, okay, Kevin, he'll twist the story around a little bit, but okay, all you got to do, okay, we're somehow, some way, and I don't know what it's going to look like, but we're going to get the ball to Frank, okay? So you need to be opposite Frank, okay? And Frank's probably is going to drift to his right. You need to be opposite Frank, and you need to be 5 yards behind him, and you need to be on the numbers, okay? Then he's kind of looking at me. The numbers is like 10, 20. I got you, coach. Okay, all right, good, Kev. Let's go do it. So 5 yards. Behind Frank, turned into 5 inches, but he was on the number. And I said, "Now has it happened?" And so Byron Boston's the line judge, and as soon as, you know, first off, we never practiced that kick. We practiced 4 or 5 different kicks every Saturday, starting when the regular season started. Didn't want to show the play to before you got down your final cut, but every Saturday we would have different kicks. We'd have a grounder over here and a grounder over there and then one over here and then a deep one there and try to hit somebody with, just so everybody understood, because it was free for all. Basically, you got to simplify it and go get the ball to Frank, push the ball away from our sideline and find the way to get the ball to Frank. And so everybody knew you got to get the ball to Frank. So anyway, I didn't think to hit a pooch to Lorenzo.
Right.
All year. I mean, what are you going to pooch it for?
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense. Well, I mean, when the ball went up, I went, oh, my gosh, what a low. I thought he was going to fair catch it. You know, there was the potential for that moment in time. I'm thinking, oh, dude, he's going to.
He tells it a little different.
Does he?
Oh, he says, like, well, now the play was that either I could catch it or Frank could catch it. And I could throw it or, you know, I just decided to hand it to Frank.
No, we didn't work that. And I guarantee.
D-Base goes, that was not the play. That was not how it goes.
No, man. So anyway. Yeah, so then I see him get it. And he knew he would get rid of that rock as fast as he could. Yeah. He didn't want any part of that. And then, you know, when I saw him get the ball to Frank and saw Frank turn his shoulders, get ball back to Kevin, I want to make sure the ball was clean. It was caught. I mean, he caught it.
Yeah.
But then I saw Byron point backwards. So when he pointed backwards, I was, okay, that's cool. That part of it's over. Now, what, you know, now it's kind of like, get what you can, get up, get out of bounds. You know, it was like that kind of thing.
That was Jeff Fisher on our show talking about the miracle, and he got the whole thing, so it worked out.
He did. I just wish those two guys are interviewing would have just stopped laughing the entire time throughout the interview with all that.
I know. So such unprofessional.
Dyson walking by. Hey, Kevin, where are you going? I don't know. I need you right now. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, you know this play, right?
Yeah, I got it. I mean, I would, you know, you're doing trick plays and like that. You know, not if you're not involved in that, nobody's paying attention. Chris Sanders probably didn't pay attention. If you're not involved in that play practice, you're not paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Standing around goofing off, telling dirty jokes.
Right, exactly. So we'll talk to Mike Keith coming up here in a few minutes about the call and watching it unfold and all of those things 26 years ago with the Music City Miracle.
Where were you again on that day?
I was at my dad's house. We were just watching.
Why did you go to the game? I thought you were big fans.
Didn't have tickets.
Was that the game you were sick?
Nope. That was the next year. That was the Christmas night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But they went.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still mad about that.
I am. But that's okay.
Oh, well.
Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome,
ruining
buddy.
My day. So we'll have more on that in a little bit. Coming up next, we're going to dive back into the latest with the coaching search with the Titans. Now Mike McDaniel has been fired in Miami. What does that mean? We'll discuss it all. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Happy birthday, Elvis. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. On this Thursday at the Omni Nashville Hotel here at Barline. Some folks in here enjoying their lunch. 615-737-1025. Keegan says, he just addresses you. Big Joe, please tell me why we won't interview Brian Flores. He's my coaching dream this cycle, but I'm just sad it's not happening.
I think Borgonzi has a relationship with Matt Nagy, and I think that's going to be the guy that they bring in. That's the only thing. Brian, and look, isn't Brian Flores still suing the NFL?
I think that's all done, but I think that Amy is going to respect that, and I think she would stay away. I think he's going to get a job, but I just not every team is going to be interested in him.
Yeah, I mean, he might work well here, but I think Amy is going to default to Mike Borgonzi. He's going to bring in his buddy and going forward. And I think they're going to hire him, and they want to go offense. Robert Saleh's my guy, followed by Art Smith Jr. Is it Jr.? Just Arthur Smith, right?
Yeah.
Because it was Fred Smith, his daddy.
Yeah, he's a Arthur Smith. Well,
it was his daddy. So those are my two right there. But
from Memphis.
Here's my deal, Keegan. You just got to get it correct.
Yep.
You got to hit a grand slam with it. You have to with this hire. You got to.
This is an interesting text. Dylan says, the Titans need to get Robert Saleh as the head coach. Mike McDaniel is the offensive coordinator with Raheem Morris as the DC.
Pretty good. Sign me up.
I take it. No, yeah, I would take okay. it. I would take it.
I just think, to me, and you call me crazy. It's fine. I think
you're crazy.
Of the eight jobs that are open right now, the most attractive one to me is the Raiders job. And I'm not a big Raiders fan. I wouldn't live in Vegas.
Because of Brady?
Brady, and you got the number one pick. You're going to bring in Mendoza. You got your quarterback. And start building from there. That's who I go. That's with me. And I think the Falcons job is the easiest way to start winning. To me, I think it's a better job than the Ravens' job. Until they figure out Lamar Jackson and what's going on in Baltimore,
look,
it ain't going to work.
Baltimore chose the quarterback over the coach.
Yes.
That's what happened.
Yep.
Because I think that relationship had soured, which I get it. I mean, you got Harbaugh that's the coach that wants things done his way. You got Lamar that's a personality, and, I mean, he thinks he's earned the right to have things done his way. And, you know, sometimes it's easier to get rid of the coach than it is the player.
Do you think Harbaugh, if Buffalo loses to Jacksonville on Sunday, that job comes open? Do you think Harbaugh is a good fit in Buffalo?
Yeah, but I don't think that job's coming open. However, I will say that Harbaugh being – like, I think 2 days ago, Mike McDaniel was safe. I think Harbaugh becoming available, all of a sudden it's like, all right, like, you see this in every sport, that if a certain coach becomes available, all of a sudden your job comes open.
Then go get him.
Right.
Don't wait today. I mean, go get him. If he's your guy, go get him.
Well, I mean, he's got to want it.
Right. So why you fired your coach? I mean,
I would think so. I mean, I would think you're not going to fire McDaniel if Harbaugh is your target and you don't think that you can't get Harbaugh.
I think if Buffalo gets bounced, it's over.
There was a report that Miami would be interested in Harbaugh, and they hadn't fired McDaniel, so now you're getting into tampering stuff, and you still have a coach, which McDaniel could have a case for.
I think the Miami job might be worse than the Titans job.
Maybe.
Of course, you got to deal with Tua. He's no good.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure out the quarterback.
You got to figure that out. And at least in Tennessee, you got the quarterback. New stadium, we're moving in next year. If Borgonzi's going to work with you, I mean, you got some solidification in the front office. It's fine. The Dolphins got a GM yet? They don't.
They're close to. It's a on ESPN. GM hire expected soon.
Okay.
The Bucks have fired their OC.
And that OC, is it Thad Lewis? Is that the OC? Him and Baker Mayfield were really, really tight.
No, it was Josh Grizzard.
Josh. Okay. Josh yeah. Grizzard.
Grizzard.
Yeah. Well, him. I've read him and Baker were real tight.
Thad Lewis was the quarterback's coach.
Okay. He get fired too?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the special teams coordinator, Thomas McGahee.
We are rearranging chairs on the Titanic.
Oh, they fired Charlie Strong, too.
Gosh, he's still around.
And cornerbacks coach Kevin Ross.
KR.
Yeah. Old Ross.
Ross.
He's not on a break.
He's not on a break. He is now.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
He is now. Let me ask. So let's fast forward this next year. What jobs could potentially come open?
Hang on.
All right.
So, because Ricky just sent us this, and I couldn't figure out why. In addition to the firings, Bucks senior offensive consultant Tom Moore, who is 87, retired after 62 years of coaching, and in the 50s coach retired as well.
Tom Moore was Manning's guy.
Yeah, and he was here for a spell.
Yep.
Would he, like, smoke on the sideline?
I think so. Look, you 87-year-old man can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, you don't argue with that.
And they are going to do it. Let me go down this. These are jobs open that could be open after the 26th season. Buffalo.
I mean, here's what I'm going to say to that.
Yes or no?
Well, if they don't win, no.
Okay. Jets job, Aaron Glenn.
Yes.
Be open, okay. Zach Taylor next year.
Yes.
Okay. Man. Shane Steichen.
With Indy?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because she's basically giving them the bleeper get off the pot. So I would say yes.
AFC West is pretty good. Broncos, Chargers, Chiefs, and Raiders are set.
Andy could retire, but.
Okay. Know. Commanders, Dan Quinn.
I don't know. I don't know how patient the new owner wants to be.
I think Nick Sirianni might just say, I'm done with this nonsense in Philadelphia.
No.
Okay. Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota.
Could be. Yes.
Dan Campbell in Detroit. That'll be his 6th year.
I think that they'd be – I kind of put Detroit and Buffalo in the same boat.
Okay.
You've had the most success you've ever had. Well, not for Buffalo, I guess. But
recently.
In recent years. But Detroit, pretty much, yeah. Can you really find someone better? But I think the riverboat gambler stuff is catching up to him. And if he keeps doing that and keeps losing games and misses the playoffs, then yes.
Tampa Bay, probably if he don't win again, he's gone.
I would say yes. He just fired all his coaches because that was basically the last dish effort to keep his job.
Kellen Moore's good with the Saints. Seahawks, Rams, Niners are all good, and the Cardinals have an open position. So it might not be any better next year if you're Harbaugh, but why rush, man? Take some time off. Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Get right back into it again. I
mean, it just depends on if there's a – like if you look at the Giants' job and you think, I can go there and they got a quarterback and we can tweak a few things and can win, you know, now or next year, then okay.
Okay.
I mean, that's how you have to look at it. And, like, the jobs that are open today, what's the closest to win now?
I think Atlanta is because of that defense.
A little bit, but I think there's still questions at quarterback. I mean, you got Cousins that's 40-something, and then do you really think Penix is the guy? He can't stay healthy. That's the problem.
Well, we'll see. But as far as that defense and things around them?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you
back,
on the defense and the running back. I mean, they got one of the best, if not the best, running backs in the game. I think Drake London's a hell of a receiver.
Yes.
You know, they got a tight end. That's pretty good. Now, I don't think he's lived up to the hype that everybody thought.
Kyle Pitts.
But he's been pretty good.
But those are the ones, man. I just think the Falcons' job to me is the quickest path to success, and we'll see what happens, man.
I'm just curious of, besides one of 32, what the biggest intrigue for this Titans job is. Is it Cam Ward? Like, are coaches actually, like, an offensive coach, or are they intrigued by Cam Ward?
Yeah.
I would say yes, but I don't know.
I would say Cam is the one. That's all you got.
Yeah.
And don't give me Jeffrey Simmons. We're talking offensive guys.
Sure, sure, sure.
And the
But, I mean, if you're Robert Saleh, I think you'd love to have Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah. But, again, if I'm offering you two first-rounders and six draft choices and everything else, you're like, all right, Jeffrey, take care, buddy.
Yeah.
You're not going to stand pat and turn down an offer which could turn your franchise around.
I can tell you this. Robert Saleh would throw Jeff's ass out of practice for throwing
a
punch.
Wouldn't take it. And yeah. I wish if Saleh comes here, we could do, like, media coach fights. Like in the boxing ring with him and watch him just pound people.
That'd be good. Coming up next, we will talk to the voice of the Vols, Mike Keith. He will join us. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday. We got to visit with this guy a little over a week ago at Nissan Stadium when the Vols were here for the Music City Bowl. We say hello now to the voice of the Volunteers and longtime voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, who joins us now. Mike, how you doing?
I'm fine. Chase and Big Joe, it is good to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. 26 years ago, hard to believe, you were sitting at your spot at Nissan Stadium after an amazing year by the Titans. They're playing the Bills and Wild Card Weekend and find themselves in need of a miracle, as you put it on the broadcast. And the rest, as they say, is history, as Kevin Dyson took it to the house and the Titans win the game. When you were in that moment, how much of the actual moment do you remember, and how much of it is listening to it over again or seeing it on television?
You know, that's a really good question, Chase, because you get into situations where after a period of time, it becomes almost a memory of a memory because you've heard certain things. Fortunately for me, though, I remember everything about what we were doing at that time. I remember everything about that day. I can remember looking out the window of the booth, and I can remember the aftermath. I can remember Pat Ryan being ready to choke me because I suggested on the air that the play would be reviewed. And it was almost like Pat thought I was giving them a hint to review. That I was telling you guys should review, you know, like I was making a suggestion, because as you guys will remember, review was new.
Yeah.
So all of that, you know, we knew that was going to happen, and I sort of knew what the rules of review were, so I knew that would happen. And I remember the longest 2 to 3 minutes of my entire life, you know, kind of waiting to see what would happen. And then I just remember so vividly, the ruling on the field stands and the pandemonium. And what stands out to me the most and why it is my most consequential sports memory and probably for a lot of people was just the incredible overall reaction that people had. I've never seen another moment like it in sports where I've seen people just almost fall out with joy.
Yeah,
it was just so special, and it's all very vivid to me still in that way. Probably a lot more so than the call. The moment is still very vivid in my memory in that way.
We've also decided, since we can't play it because, you know, it's Titans radio, can you just reenact it? We'll have Joe be Pat Ryan.
Sure. For $25.
Well, there you go. We could make.
You know what I got paid for that?
What's that?
$50.
Really?
At that time, true story, at that time, the NFL paid broadcasters $50 per call for the different things that they would use for films, because there was inside the NFL, remember? Len Dawson, yeah. Nick Bonacani. And then they used all these highlights, and it was a really good deal if you made the playoffs. If you made the Super Bowl, it was fantastic, because it ended up being a nice check in the spring that you could use for family vacation or to paint the house or whatever. It was great, but got paid $50 for that call. Just like a quarterback sack or a normal touchdown or a great catch over the middle or, you know, whatever, $50.
One of my favorite parts of the whole sequence is, I mean, as a Titans fan and at the time, you know, a kid that.
How absolutely, old were you?
So I was 12.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I was 12, and I was sitting at my dad's, and we were sitting in the living room watching it, and I think we actually had, because we like to do that, I think we had your call on the radio, and then we're on the TV as well. But I will never forget, do the Titans have a miracle left in them in what has been a magical season to this point? If they do, they need it now. And that was just the setup for that, that in the moment, you know, obviously you knew what was on the line. But to just hear that even so now, 26 years later, was just like it tells the story so perfectly.
Yeah, hokey, right? I mean, just totally hokey. Just completely over the top. I mean, when I think about that, I just think about the dumb luck of all of that, of the whole thing. I mean, I'm this young broadcaster. I'm not very good. I've gotten this major opportunity. I get to call a playoff game. I say that right beforehand. In a strange way, I get the play right, which there were so many plays that year I didn't get right. And the other three broadcasts end up with it, you know, more screwed up than mine was. And so they end up using my call. And, I mean, how lucky was I? I mean, that's it. If you don't believe in the good Lord taking care of you, I mean, that's a tremendous example because it kept me in a job for 25 more years. So I was, to this day, I'm phenomenally thankful that all of that worked out. And I mean, it was nothing more than just good luck and the opportunity to be at the right place at the right time. And so special for me to understand, I mean, to hear you were 12, I mean, that means so much to me because I think about the moments where I was 12 and sports impact me. Like I was 12 during the 80 Olympics when the Winter Olympics, when the hockey team beat the Russians. And that was a profound moment in my life. And I don't know anything about hockey. I didn't know anything about hockey at the time. Most Americans didn't, but you know, it was a profound moment in my life, and that's really neat to hear that. That means a lot.
The great Mike Heath is on with the Chase and Big Joe Show. You know, Mike, that four-game run, Bills, Colts, Jags, Super Bowl, that's about as perfect as it gets for a radio broadcaster, yeah. I would think.
Best 22 days of my life. I mean, the whole thing. So to even take it back further, you'll remember this, Joe. We play Pittsburgh on Sunday to end the regular season. We're waiting to see if Jacksonville might lose, because if they lose, we win the division. They don't. It's a 72-degree day in Pittsburgh, and we've just gone through Y2K and all that. We had to go to Pittsburgh a day early because the league was worried what might happen to the airlines with Y2K. So we've had this whole weird thing happen.
Right.
We win this game. We come back. We're going to play Buffalo. The game's going to be on Saturday. We find out on Monday that the owner, Ralph Wilson, is making Wade Phillips start Rob Johnson instead of the guy who'd been the starter all year, Doug Flutie, which was bizarre. I actually ended up telling Jeff Fisher that because I was listening to Wade Phillips' press conference, and I went down to Jeff Fisher's office, and he was walking into his press conference, and I said, "What'd you think about the Doug Flutie thing?" He goes, "What are you talking about?" And so I said, "Oh, I was just listening to Wade's press conference. They're going to start Rob Johnson." Well, I mean, so that's bizarre. So we go to play this game on Saturday, and it's cold and it's rainy. During the course of the week, too, remember, we don't know if we're going to sell that game out because the sellout streak had gone on through the regular season. But we had to sell basically all the tickets that week. And at that time, this was not an automatic. And so we sell out. The game happens. The Music City Miracle happens. We think we're going to go to Indianapolis. And you know, we're going to lose, right? Because you never win after something like the Miracle happens. Well, so we go there, and there are 1,000 people in the hotel waiting on us. It's crazy. We beat Indianapolis. We're on the plane back. They tell us there are 10,000 people waiting inside Nashville Airport. Crazy. Because at that time, this was pre-9/11, you could go to the gate and wait for your party. And so people are throughout the, you know, they had to escort us through the airport. It was crazy. We go beat Jacksonville, and there are 40,000 people waiting for us at Nissan Stadium. There's no week off. We have to turn around the next day and go right to Atlanta. We get off the plane, and I get on the national news because I'm walking behind Steve McNair coming off the plane. I didn't know that. I would have dressed better. But it was cool because I'm saying this is, you know, I'm some guy from Franklin, and now I'm going, because you always see the shots of the teams to this day, getting off the plane, headed to the air, you know, headed to the Super Bowl site, whatever. The Super Bowl happens. It doesn't go our way. We get back, and Nashville has a parade that's bigger than St. Louis's winning parade. I mean, the whole scenario was just this crazy, almost like a fever dream. But I can remember so many moments so vividly throughout all of it.
And then it ends with 1 yard short.
Yeah, and it's the same guy. I mean, the literary nature, the poetic nature of the fact that the guy who scores on the miracle play ends up, you know, a half yard short. And how it impacts Kevin Dyson's life, you know, what we've seen him go on to do with his incredible life and what he continues to do. And, you know, the whole thing is there's so many stories within the story that just continue to evolve from all of it. I mean, it's a tremendous memory. It really sort of seared the NFL into people's hearts, not just in Nashville, not just in Middle Tennessee, but throughout the region. You know, people throughout the region got so excited. And I met somebody last week from Western Kentucky, and they said, hey, you know, I was a St. Louis Cardinals baseball fan, but and everybody in Western Kentucky is a St. Louis Cardinal baseball fan, but we weren't Rams fans. We were Titans fans.
Right.
And and to think about that, I mean, that is just that's just really a neat thing to keep in mind.
I think it's great. Mike, you're one of our favorite people, man, and I know you're so busy, and thank you for taking time today to come out and be with us.
I have one more question that I want to I want to throw in there.
Yes, you know, I love Joe's book. I'm already reading it. Yes.
It's a good one. You know, in the written and unwritten rules of broadcasting, the color man, the color analyst, generally is asked to lay out during the play-by-play. But Pat's call of he's got something, was so organic on top of you calling the play that I just think it makes the whole thing come together. But how were you able to kind of stay focused? Because, like, I can get sometimes, you know, somebody else chimes in, it might throw you off. So how were you able to kind of stay focused on watching Dyson and calling the rest of the play?
You know, Pat and I had worked together for a long time in Knoxville. We had done radio and TV together. So we had a nice, you know, sort of balance together about different things. And Pat would yell over me on punt return calls when we were doing Anderson County against Halls, and he'd talk over me on talk shows. So I guess the honest, and I love Pat Ryan so much, I was used to it, and it didn't affect me at that point, because like I said, we had done things together for 7 years. And the other part of it too, to your point, that I think is just great, is Pat saw it open up the minute Kevin caught the ball. When the call is synced to the play, that is not what was happening. It hasn't been affected to sync with the play. That's literally as it happened. That's one of the most incredible things in broadcasting I have ever seen by a color analyst. And it's one of the reasons that I always believe Pat's part of it is easily the best. And it's also the reason most people walk up to me when they talk about the miracle play and they say, he's got something, he's got something. And I say, that was the other guy, that was the other guy. But I totally respect and understand why they do.
Well, I always say it's a miracle. The Titans have pulled a miracle. So that's the one I go with. And, yes, as a 12-year-old, I heard that call, and much like John Ward was to you, Mike, you are to me. So I appreciate it. I appreciate the friendship we've developed over the years, and thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I decided in that very moment, anytime anybody wants to talk about that, no matter where I am or what I'm doing or what's happening, I'm so blessed that I was there. I'll talk about it anytime. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Enjoy basketball season, and we'll talk soon.
We'll see you in March for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Keith, voice of the Vols, talking about the Music City Miracle and one of our favorites.
Just sit back and listen, man.
Yep.
Let me tell the story.
Absolutely. We'll shift gears. We'll talk a little hockey with Greg Wyshynski coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.